So Aki, great to meet you. Thanks for joining the show. Welcome everybody to episode 110. Today is discrete log contracts and a business, a specific business. We've got a technology, we've got a business here. Let's just start with the vision.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me. Yeah, and thanks everyone. Nice to meet y'all. Vision, very simple. There's a lot of Bitcoin out there. But if you want to use the Bitcoin for any kind of finance, lending, trading, investing, you know, if you want to earn a yield on your Bitcoin, today you have to use an intermediary, like a custodian or a bridge. You have to kind of bring, because Bitcoin is, you know, not inherently compatible with Ethereum and other chains. And the problem is, like, you've got this decentralized, the most decentralized asset in the world, but you have to centralize it to use it. And that doesn't make sense. So what we're building is a way for Bitcoin to be held in a decentralized state and used in DeFi to earn a yield and you know, to make investment returns.
Yeah, so this is a good high level, right? So this is explaining some of the vision, finance, decentralizing, you know, moving Bitcoin, which is the first of them. This really wasn't the idea of Bitcoin originally. We didn't come out with Bitcoin thinking about the word finance. We thought of payments. These other things that we wanted, these additional requirements like finance, DeFi, disintermediation, all these things kind of were inspired later, and of course through Ethereum. So Ethereum, DeFi, you know, gave us this vocabulary. Why not bring it back to the asset or the network that started all this? That's Bitcoin.
Yeah, absolutely. And Bitcoin, in many ways, I mean, you know, often with an invention, there's something that does something new scientifically or technically, and then it just takes a while to find the right application for that, you know, product market fit. I mean, we as entrepreneurs always look for it. And so, yeah, Bitcoin was going to be like electronic cash, but it's actually better than cash. It's more like digital gold, or maybe it's an asset, you know, different from gold. But it's definitely the place where you want to put your savings. It's like a savings account for the world. You don't have to worry about money printing or whatever. So it's a hard asset, and it's basically like the liquidity asset. You know, protocols on ETH are basically where you use liquidity. Usually people think of Ethereum as a computing system. They're not thinking of it as the asset as much. You're just paying the gas to use the system. It's more like AWS or something like that. You know, bringing the biggest asset to the best computing chain just makes all the sense in the world.
Now, I did research into the papers, but maybe you could tell us more about you and kind of how the business came into this direction.
Yeah, I'm not a cryptographer, but I've been an entrepreneur all my life. I've been a developer since I was a kid. I did a CS undergrad, business degree. I spent a little bit of time in management consulting, private equity, venture. I invented a way to use AI to optimize content for search marketing. I built it up to 50 people, one turn around the sun kind of thing. I made a lot of mistakes, learned a lot of stuff. I read the Bitcoin white paper in 2011. I just couldn't, at the time, I was so focused on AI, I just didn't get into it. So I thought, heck, you know, I missed the big run up, but the next best time is now. Bitcoin is still big. And also, I believe in a multi-chain world. And I wanted to basically build something that brings together these different communities. A friend of mine told me about DLCs. I read the white paper and I really, really just got interested. And I joined the DLC community, which at the time was run by a company called Shorebits. DLC teams at the time were thinking Bitcoin only. So, like, let's see if we can use DLCs to bring Bitcoin to ETH. And that was over 2 years ago, and we've been building toward that ever since.
I like how you're thinking about Ethereum. Technically, DLC works for arbitrary business functions. On-chain, off-chain, sports gambling is a huge use case. We got a new brick, and that's how cryptographic primitives work, right? So you get the brick, and you plug it in, and it just things unlock.
Yeah, it totally is. And I would say there's a version of the DLC that is described in, you know, 2018 in that paper as Shorebits, and they often use the sports betting analogy too. So I wouldn't say what we're doing is like purely the best example of what you might read in the white paper, but it definitely uses, you know, parts of that DLC technology, and then we've tried to enhance it with, you know, other parts out there.
As we're going, I've already sketched up our ASCII diagram of the day. This is a Lego block, and we definitely want to really get how that works.
I'd love to see what this ASCII art. I'm very, very excited. Ooh.
Yeah. Here's my understanding. We've got a cryptographic primitive.
Gotta love technology.
Basically, the whole point of Bitcoin is to send it somewhere else. And that's how it works today. This is how people think. They think, I've got the Bitcoin. I want to send it to you. And now you have it. And you can send it to someone else. They can get a little fancy. They can use Lightning. But that's just a microcosm of this concept, which is we're moving BTC from one place to somewhere else. The thing that happens on top of this is a lot of people just take all their BTC and give it to Grayscale, or they give it to Binance. It's not like you lend it to them or you authorize them. It's like they have it. So now the thing that we're introducing is here. And there is this oracle. They're pre-wired to A, B, C, or D, while there's this authorized input, which is a signed message that goes into the oracle, and then it spits out one of these predetermined outcomes. The outcomes could include things like give me everything back or give it all to them.
Yes, with one change. The only difference, which is really important, is the Bitcoin does not go to the oracle. The oracle is not even part of the multisig. Let's say you have Alice and Bob, you know, with Bitcoin. The Bitcoin goes to some combination of Alice and Bob, but it cannot go to the oracle. And that's the big kind of advantage of the DLC. But with the DLC, it's possible to make it so you have custody. You put Bitcoin like into the DLC, but it can only flow to you, for example, which is what we do when we're, you know, when we're building our app. Bitcoin is, it's literally impossible to steal because you don't send it to anyone else other than yourself. But the fact that you can control Bitcoin, now you can conditionally send it places, which is the basis for pretty much, you know, every financial system, you know, ever.
Let's build this out a little bit. So the Bitcoin is in a spot. Mm-hmm. There's no individual address that can just rug pull out of there. So it's locked.
Yes.
Is it possible for the Oracle to rug pull? Well, not to rug pull, but to block it.
Great question. Yes. Say, what if they never publish their what's called the attestation? What if they never publish the thing that moves the Bitcoin? That's bad. Or what if they refuse to publish? They can censor the transaction. But really, you want a bunch of different oracles who are all attesting to the same event to make sure that if any of them are misleading or refusing to act, you can kind of spot them and weed them out and get around it.
So this is not time locked. So there's no bailout condition based on time.
Yes and no. So you could actually time lock it, but it is not, it doesn't have to be time locked. The typical way of locking Bitcoin is a time lock, something called the HTLC. With a PTLC, you can have many conditions, one of which could be time, or it could just be unlimited. So you really can, you know, unlock it on any condition.
I'm going to draw a bailout condition here. And this is going to be a dash pattern because this is not the primary exit route. And that could be a time lock, could be something else. And there could be other conditions. The condition itself doesn't have to be a number. It could actually be, it has to be signed. I guess you don't want them being known ahead of time because they could be, you know, then anybody could just pick one of them. That would be bad. So there's a privacy inspect. If it's possible that multiple oracles could have disagreeing outcomes, then there could be a race or something.
Yes. You have to find a way to determine what's the right answer. Yeah.
The signature can go other places. So this is another feature of composability of this whole system. You can have Bitcoin going to A, B, or C, but when that signature is played, that signature itself could be read and interpreted on Ethereum or any other network.
Yeah, and the signature could come from another network. The thing that determines where the Bitcoin can come from any system. Doesn't even have to be in crypto. It could be like a JavaScript app on a website. It could be anything. Could be a centralized system. And if you're trusting a centralized system to tell you where the Bitcoin goes, and any one of those outcomes is the Bitcoin going to that centralized system, you don't really gain anything. You might as well just send it to them right off the bat. And so for that, you know, we're focusing on Ethereum, Solana, et cetera. The other thing that really gave us a lot of like thinking is what are these other outcomes? So let's say Alice puts in some Bitcoin, like under what condition does it go to Bob, and like how does that all work, and like what is Alice's relationship to Bob? And long story short, we kind of simplified it a lot, because if Bob is receiving Alice's Bitcoin, then Bob is a money transmitter. And Bob needs to be like a licensed money transmitter. They're receiving customer funds. You know, Alice, of course, is a user or end user of this. Basically, we say like outcome one is like the deposit like goes back to Alice. It's the locking, like the self-wrapping, we call it. And outcome two is like this liquidation outcome. But whoever the liquidator is, basically either, I mean, they have to be a money transmitter minimum. So we even took a step further and we made it even simpler. And for our DLC BTC bridge, we only have one outcome. The Bitcoin can only go back to Alice. And the thing that we're actually using is the locking mechanism. And we're like, geez, well, what if you put Bitcoin in, get this ETH token, ERC20, use that in DeFi, and when you're done with it, you burn it, you get your Bitcoin back. And literally all the Bitcoin chain has done is lock state and unlock state. And so anyway, that's how we got to DLC BTC and what we're doing today.
You want to incentivize Alice to put Bitcoin into a box, and then you're going to send the Bitcoin back to Alice.
Yes.
And you're going to pay her yield.
And right. So then Alice can, like, let's say Alice basically like kind of temporarily transfers her Bitcoin value to an Ethereum token. Then she can put it in different protocols and basically invest it or take loans. Then you need one more thing, like if the Alice's, you know, DLC BTC ends up with, you know, Charlie, then Charlie needs a way to redeem it and get actual Bitcoin underneath it. That's like another design thing. But basically, you know, Alice can put her Bitcoin at, or her DLC BTC at risk, knowing that she can only unlock that Bitcoin if she has that amount of DLC BTC on the other side.
Got it. So this is bridging. It's only bridging.
Yeah. From there on, it's like bridging. Yeah. Yep.
And now also that does not allow partial return.
That's correct. So when in DLCs, you could have partial outcomes, but in order to implement that, you do also need that Bob again. Like you need Bob to like cash out half of it or whatever. And the situation gets really complicated again, because none of that stuff exists on Bitcoin today. So what we have instead are what we call DLC BTC merchant. If you're familiar with WBTC, you and I as retail people, we cannot mint or burn WBTC directly. So like, great, we can have wholesalers ourselves, and those wholesalers just have huge Bitcoin, you know, and DLC BTC positions. They can trade away and stuff. And then if they run low, then they just buy more from the other merchants, or they put Bitcoin in and mint more. Either way, any retail person holding DLC BTC will know that they can redeem it at these particular outlets. Then we can kind of build an ecosystem around that.
That makes sense. Now, the opportunities for rug pulling here are obviously is that the Oracle can sign anything. So you could move in 100 Bitcoin and double spend.
The Bitcoin side would not allow double spending, but yeah, you need Oracle to be truthful. And like you said, you need a penalty mechanism for Oracles who are not. You need some sort of way to establish reputation. So yeah, all of these parts have to be there.
This makes sense. I honestly don't see why a bridge with bidirectional time hash lock contracts isn't better.
The big difference is with bridges, you have to send your Bitcoin to a wallet held by the bridge. In some way, you know, shape or form, grab one of those wallet keys, then all of the Bitcoin in that pool is gone. I guess like an atomic swap maybe, or...
It's a channel. You establish a channel, you both commit, and then it comes out. That same mechanism, which uses hash time lock contracts, could be done across networks from Bitcoin to Ethereum.
That would be really cool. If somebody built something like that and it worked really well, that would be...
There's different levels here. So the worst level is what we have today. The outcome we have today is anybody can take anything. Outcome with DLC is one of the specified outcomes is chosen. The outcome we all want is only the acceptable outcome happens. And so this is an improvement.
In the way that we're doing it, at least, because there's only one outcome, it's more like an advantage and a limitation that Alice can only get the Bitcoin. In no matter what happens, Alice gets the Bitcoin or the Bitcoin stays locked. Like those are the only two things that can happen. And so the system is really easy to, from that standpoint, to control.
I like the simplicity. Like you said, it's thoughtful to avoid the requirement of money broker, that's a problem. And so if you're taking it from A and giving it back to A, I don't know any laws that prevent that or regulations. And it's a very, I don't know if it's a hack, but it's definitely not the primitive that the regulators were thinking about.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. We really struggled for the word until we kind of came up with self-wrapping, because like usually when you're doing something like this, you put it in escrow. But escrow are like escrow providers, and they actually are money transmitters, and they have all this regulation. Here it's like self-escrow, but that doesn't make sense. So we're like, okay, self-wrapping, self-locking. Yeah, that's basically, yeah, there's no like financial equivalent. I guess a locked DLC is some form of self-custody because you hold a key to it, but you don't hold all the keys, but you hold a key.
One more attack. Because of the quantum aspect, you're putting in one and you can't get out unless you have one. There's now a griefing attack available, which is where you put one in and you spend 0.001 and now you can't cash out. And so now you're in a point where that 0.001 is worth 0.5 to you.
100% right. That's absolutely right. In fact, I was recently interviewed on Epicenter. It's on their podcast and YouTube. And we go into this in great detail with the, like, what is the counterparty risk? However, we think that is still more advantageous to the fully custodial model and probably advantageous or you know, safer than the bridge model, because the bridge model has also, like, just the chance of a hack, which, you know, with anytime smart contracts are put out there, there's probably, like, 10,000 very skilled hackers who are looking to exploit it. It's, you know, Ethereum is a dark forest, as they say.
I like everything I've heard so far. The smaller the implementation, the better. The clearer the fees, the better. And this will really help. And then also, again, you're making a primitive here, so you don't know what's going to happen. None of us know.
Yes.
Your goal is not these outcomes. You don't care about sports betting. You don't care about anything. You don't care about bridges. All you care about is people using this primitive.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We really believe, I mean, DLCs have so much more potential. And I mean, we are one of the first. We're not the first by any stretch, but we're one of the first. And if we can scale up DLC use, other smart people, hopefully even someone listening to this show, could kind of like take it to the next level. And there are definitely a lot of designs possible, and there are a lot of different kind of use cases and problems to solve. So really excited to see, like, you know, innovation. And to that effect, we want to support it too. So we have our commercial business, which is DLC BTC, bridging it, you know, making, like, launching it on different DEXs and lending protocols and just making it all work there. That's one. And then we have our community business, where whenever we get some unexpected question or something, somebody has a request. You know, for example, like, can I wrap an ordinal? You know, can I put an ordinal in DLC? Well, up until recently, you were not able to, but now you can, because we built in coin control. So you can put any kind of Bitcoin asset in there and you're not going to spend it as gas. Now you can build decentralized, you know, ordinal lending apps in a Bitcoin only world. And so basically there's, yeah, it's going to evolve, and we want to support the whole ecosystem.
Nice. Let me ask you a dumb question. So in terms of today's price of Bitcoin and today's price of gas, what is the dollar cost today?
The full thing in the current implementation on L1 ETH is about $100.
On L1 ETH, on both sides?
On the Bitcoin side and on the L1 side, yeah.
Got it.
So I think there are two Bitcoin transactions. One is when it goes in, one is when it comes out. So that's
fixed. Full trip.
Yeah, so like when Alice deposits Bitcoin, she pre-signs and prepays the return fees as well. So she obviously pays for the, you know, to go there, but she also prepays the going back. Kind of expensive right now to do it. I mean, it's also the first implementation. You know, we haven't really been able to optimize it yet. Like, that's all stuff we intend to do. When I see a lot of crypto protocols and they're already complicated, you're just like, oh my gosh, all the attack vectors and the options, like, how is this actually going to work? Even a dead simple thing like what we're doing, it's really, really simple. There are, there's like systems and things that influence other things and, you know, multi-layered, you know, like multiple things can go wrong at the same time. And then that trips. So there are these edge cases. So we want to, because we're dealing with people's money, and a lot of it, you know, we want to be very careful about that.
Anita Max, win.
Oh, we got it. That might be coming next episode.
Oh, yeah.
What's up, Avakasi?
What's going on? How's everybody doing today? Aloha, beautiful people.
We are warmed up.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I'm over here trying to learn how to get this win.
Well, before you guys move on, you might want to consider grabbing one of these Solana 2 Saga phones that just came out. Yep, just want to go ahead and put that out there so you guys can get rich.
I haven't looked at it, but if it's the Solana mobile phone, my friend designed a lot of the software on it.
Nice, dude. I need your discount code.
Tap that in with a veteran code for veterans.
037, what's good?
Nothing much. I obviously still have to look into the like DLC implementation to have any notable comments on it. My general take, you already know what it is on, you know, smart contracts on Bitcoin. That CVE kind of talks for itself, the one we talked about prior. That makes it difficult for smart contracts to exist on Bitcoin. But I do see value in being able to store certain types of metadata on chain and being able to revisit it. But I'd have to look into DLC to see how it would leverage those controls more in depth to fully understand it.
Like as an engineer, I get why there will never be smart contracts on Bitcoin. like Bitcoin was designed for one thing, to keep things really, really safe. And with Ethereum and whatever, it's an amazing ecosystem, but you will always have different bugs and stuff, which is fine, except not fine with your bank account. So that was our kind of contribution to the whole thing, is like, let the smart contracts live on ETH. On Bitcoin, you're just like lock, unlock. That's it. Like that's it. The range of motion on Bitcoin is the most limited it can be.
Yeah, I agree with you on that 100%. Especially the ETH take, like, you know, security and ETH are, you know, still very challenging things to accomplish even today.
And the idea would be to not buy a house that if the window did break, you would have to replace the house, and instead of just replacing the window.
And for better or for worse, what a lot of people are doing now is they're not publishing immutable smart contracts, they're publishing immutable proxy contracts, and the proxy contract points to mutable, like a changeable contract.
Awesome.
Oh, it's been great. Thank you so much. Thanks for everyone for joining. And if you have any questions, you know where to find me on Twitter and so on. So really excited to see if even just one person comes out of here and builds something or influences someone to build something with DLCs. It's been a huge win.